Hello and welcome to a live episode of Pop Culture on the Program with Mystery Chris and myself.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, we haven't talked in a while. We had to skip last week because of me moving.
I know, moving on up.
I still got your Christmas present sitting here among all my boxes.
What? Christmas is ruined.
Yeah, I've got to see you. For anyone watching, if it's your first time here, this is a new channel called Deprogrammed. Please hit subscribe and like if you like it. And if you don't like it, you can hit don't like. Although YouTube has removed our ability to see that you don't like it. I don't know why that button's still there, but you can do that. And what else? We have a Locals. We have a subscribe star and a Patreon if you want to support the show. And I think that's all the announcements. Oh, and tomorrow, I should say this. Tomorrow, I have a deprogrammed interview coming out with Michael Rechtenwald. He's known as the anti-PC prof. Do you know who he is, Chris?
No, I don't.
He's awesome. We read one of his books in book club, and he's written a lot of... We read one of his novels, fiction, but he's written a lot of nonfiction, the Google Archipelago. He's written a lot about big tech and communism, and he's so interesting because... He was a professor at NYU. He was a Marxist professor. I mean, that's not what he taught, but he was self-described as, you know, he was a Marxist. And he started waking up to some of the woke stuff in academia pretty early and has a whole story about what happened to him and getting canceled at university for speaking out. And he has a lot of insights into how the woke ideology is melding with corporate power. And so that interview comes out tomorrow at 6 o'clock Texas time for anyone who's interested. And we're glad you're here hanging out with us. As somebody in the chat said, I think it was Adam, if smoke them if you got them, we're talking about anti-drug propaganda tonight in entertainment.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Yeah.
I'm high right now.
No, you're not. I know you too well.
Yeah, I'm a square.
Yeah, you're the coolest square that I know.
Hey, guys, don't do drugs. Drugs aren't cool.
Drugs aren't cool. Yeah, this is a perfect topic for you to talk about, isn't it? Sort of?
Yeah.
Okay. Chris is the guy. I'm going to out you now. He is what alcoholics we call a normal drinker. And a normal drinker usually has a beer or two at a social event and stops there. It's pretty crazy. I used to look at him and be like, what are you doing?
I get that a lot. People are like, hey, you want me to put a nipple on that, you know, bottle? I'm like, I'm a slow drinker. My stomach's very small. Can't put a lot of liquids in it.
You have a very healthy appreciation of alcohol, and I admire it. I wish I could drink like that, but it is not for me. So when you suggested this topic, well, why don't you tell us a little bit about what it is we're going to watch tonight and why you're interested in it?
So we're going to talk about the kind of anti-drug culture that existed mostly in the 80s and 90s, but we're going to go even further back. We're going to talk a little bit about Reefer Madness, which came out in the 30s. But, you know, I grew up, you know, 90s and was exposed to a lot of the anti-drug PSAs and to a lot of the shows that had it, like Saved by the Bell, which we're going to talk about too. And that had somewhat of an effect on me, but I don't think I was ever the person that was, you know, needed to rebel. And I didn't have any deep-seated traumas or anything, so there's really no need for me to go crazy, you know, with drugs or anything. But I had lots of friends who did, so it's just interesting to think about how the culture was so obsessed in a way, you know, or at least that was being pushed through a lot of TVs, you know, trying to corral drug usage and, you know, through television and movies, which didn't work. But it's a weird, interesting time you think about it. Just... Well, it's very quaint. Like, that's cute. You just think about it, you know, the effort's like, oh, that's cute. Telling kids not to do drugs. Oh.
Do you think that the efforts were genuine? That the government really cared?
Well, I mean, there's some people I think within the government that did, but you know, like I was alluding to just a moment ago, I think a lot of what they were going after was the symptoms and not the cause of the, you know, addictions. And I think, you know, similarly with the Satanic Panic, which we're going to do an episode in the near future on that, I think a lot of people were, they understood that certain values were eroding in the culture, and they understood that subversion was happening various ways, but they were attacking the symptoms, not the problem. And I think the problem has to deal more with broken families. You know, I think the sexual revolution did a lot of damage towards families, you know, feminism, you know, birth control, abortion. Is something going on this week about with abortion or something? I don't know. But I think that a lot of those things created an environment in which, you know, these broken families emerge, and that created unstable environments for kids to grow up in. And I think that, you know, is the major cause. And there's other causes, of course, but I think that's really the major cause for a lot of people who have serious drug problems. And I'm not just talking about like the regular, like, you know, smoke pot here and there. I mean, lots of people do that and we're fine. And just, I don't think
you're talking
wrong
about
that.
Full-blown like addiction.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm talking about, you know, people who are doing, you know, heroin. Does anyone do heroin anymore? Is that a 90s thing? I don't know.
Okay. So, you know, my husband, Anthony, he's sober. Also, he usually jokes when he's at shows where they, cause every gig he does, they'll offer him a drink, you know? And so just to be funny, he'll be like, do you got any Everclear? Like something really disgusting. And then and a turpentine, I'll take some turpentine. And this last time he was at a show this past weekend and he said he asked for heroin. He was like, you got any heroin? And and he was just joking. And then later he was going to the bathroom and there was this lady waiting outside the bathroom. She was like, hey, I heard you.
Oh, no.
Smack.
No.
No. So, in answer to your question, maybe people still do heroin.
Somebody doesn't.
I just want to put this comment on the screen, Chris. M. Perlotti says, the PSAs were reverse psychology. You tell a kid no, and what do? Well, I tend to agree with that, but do you think they were intended to be reverse psychology? I've become very skeptical of the government, but I don't not skeptical enough that I think that in the 80s and 90s they wanted us doing lots of drugs. Do people think that? I don't know.
Well, I mean, you know, you could argue that the government makes a lot of money off of, you know, imprisoning people for, you know, drug offenses, so you could see, but yeah, I don't know if it's quite that, you know, because again, you know, those deeper, you know, those more serious drugs, I think, stem from deeper issues. And I don't know if, you know, somebody being told that heroin is bad is going to make them go, hey, I want to try some heroin. Now, weed, I mean, but we like, because all the propaganda regarding weed, this was a lot of it's pretty silly, you know, like we're going to talk about with Reefer Madness when they're essentially describing, you know, meth or some other harder drug and people are going crazy and doing all these terrible things. And so
yeah,
I think though the light drug use, you know, I could see some influence, you know, some people doing the lighter drugs because, you know, it was brought to their attention and it was done in such a ham-fisted goofy way that just made the people seem, you know, like old squares.
Yeah, I think that when I was younger, I thought that the slippery slope thing that they talked about was a fallacy, the gateway drug thing, you know, where they tried to warn us. I remember, I guess, one of the biggest takeaways, I went through DARE. We're of that age. You went through DARE. And one of the biggest takeaways for me was they were trying to tell us, you know, marijuana is a gateway drug, that there are different kinds of gateway drugs. And I didn't buy that at the time. But in practice, that was true in my life. I think maybe for people who have, like you said, these other underlying issues that are not being addressed that stem from childhood or what have you, or they have an addictive personality or whatever it happens to be, if you are prone to that, then yeah, I think sometimes kids will start with one thing and say, and almost because they scared kids so much about marijuana, and then you try marijuana and you're like, it's not that big of a deal. Maybe they're lying about coke too. You know what I mean? Like maybe the messaging could have been a little better about, like, yes, it is a gateway drug, but like, let's not go over the top and talk about how crazy marijuana is, right? You know, because then if kids try it and they're like, oh, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
So yeah, somebody says cocaine's a pretty damaging drug. Yes, it is. Yeah, that's the point, is that you don't want them to send people in the wrong direction thinking, oh, well, maybe they were lying about that too. So what do you want to start with? Because we have a lot of things queued up.
Yeah, we do. I don't know. I know you probably have more stuff than I do. So you want to pick something?
Do we want to show some clips first, and then we can read some of the articles about the success or failure of DARE?
Sure. We can do some of that.
Let's start with an oldie then. Let's start with the Reefer Madness trailer. Pirate Tomsky. You guys, give it up for Pirate Tomsky in the chat. He is up at an insane hour helping us produce tonight because Cole couldn't be here. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay. These high school boys and girls are having a hop at the local soda fountain. Innocently, they dance. Innocent of a new and deadly menace lurking behind closed doors.
Black mold.
In this film, you will see the ease with which this vicious plant can be grown in your neighbor's yard, rolled into harmless-looking cigarettes, hidden in an innocent shoe.
James Bond, too.
What's a guilty shoe look like?
It's got no rhythm.
As he takes the first step toward enslavement.
This hits close to crying.
I was going to say, speaking of squares. Apparently, marijuana makes you stay up all night and play the piano.
Really well.
Before it is too late.
Thank you, Pirate. Oh man, Matt Deckard, where'd you find a movie of me and my friends from 2005? Yeah, so this movie came out. It was funded by a church group.
Yeah, some church group funded it. It was like, it was in 1936.
And then it had a resurgence in the 70s. It became kind of a cult classic where people loved laughing.
In the ironic way, right. Yeah.
Yes, like we just did. but this is really the iconic anti-drug propaganda piece. And you can watch the full film. It's on YouTube. It's in the popular domain now. So we can play more clips if we want, if there's any that you want to show. But if people want to go watch the whole movie, you can watch it for free on YouTube.
I watched the whole one. In fact, I watched the color version. Someone colorized it, and I guess they purposely chose like goofy colors because like the pot smoke is green. It just makes it look weird. But yeah, the movie's hilarious.
It's one of those films you sort of, in the 70s, I can imagine people would get stoned while watching it.
Yes.
To make it funnier. Yeah.
But I want to know, like, what was the issue, like how widespread was pot smoking in the 1930s for this church to believe that was such an issue that they needed to fund a movie to warn parents and, you know, ship this around the country? Like, how big was this? Because my thoughts when I think about marijuana, I think about that really coming big in the 60s.
Yeah, I don't think it was that big of a deal then. Someone correct us in the chat if we're wrong. But I agree with you. I don't think it was that widespread in terms of using it. My grandfather grew up during the Great Depression. And when he was a kid, So in the 20s, I guess, or the late teens, or in the early 20s, he'd started smoking cigarettes, not marijuana, but cigarettes when he was a kid. And they didn't have enough money to buy cigarettes after a certain point. And so he told me they would roll up coffee and smoke coffee grinds.
Jeez.
Isn't that crazy? I did no PSAs about that, but I'm sure that could have been good for you. That's what he did in the 30s.
Well, it wasn't what year did the prohibition end? I'm trying to remember. Was it 29? I want to say.
I'm going to look it up.
Yeah.
Why?
Because it's just odd. Like when I was watching the movie, everything they showed was a lot more associated with alcohol than marijuana. It just seemed odd that they would essentially take the same thing but just turn it to weed. You could observe that. Oh, so 33.
Prohibition, yeah, ran from 1920 to 1933. So this film came out 3 years after.
It just seems odd timing for that to come out, particularly when obviously there are more issues with, you know, alcohol, and still are, I would argue, than with weed 3 years after. But they saw how prohibition went, which was not well. So
yeah.
So it just seemed like they were turning to something else and just kind of projecting things, you know, the terrible things from alcohol onto marijuana.
Yeah. Brentley. Hi, Brentley. Brentley's here. He says the primary motivation in outlawing it was actually to harass lower class people with legal justification. That sounds about right. That reminds me of the way they've used gun laws to harass black people.
It was like the crime bill that Joe Bonser helped sponsor, how that disproportionately penalized crack usage, and crack is very widely used amongst a lot of blacks. And so a lot of people are arguing that by the definition that, you know, certain Democrats use when it comes to saying what modern day systemic racism is, which is, according to them, you know, laws that disproportionately affect blacks, then by that logic, that crime bill that was sponsored by Joe Biden perpetuated racism.
Yeah, I believe that. Look, super chat from Zap. Thank you, Zap. He says, the irony is that this is great to watch stoned. Yeah, I think that's probably the way it's been viewed most often. I don't know how many sober people other than Mystery Chris have watched it. So we're going to take a giant leap forward because we are familiar. You and I are children of the 80s and 90s. I think there's probably a lot of people in the chat who are. And we were right at the heyday of the DARE initiative where the government, so that film was funded by a church, but then the government said, we're going to get involved in trying to curb drug use. And they started paying under the Reagan administration, they started paying different entertainment entities to put anti-drug propaganda into TV shows, into film. And then they also started rolling out a lot of these commercials and things, even using some of the commercials, using popular characters from television, children's characters and stuff to promote this anti-drug message. So we can start with, let's see, what's a good one? How about we do some of the commercials first?
Okay.
Pirate, pull up the one that I sent you last. I think it's five of them all together, so you can watch them in one clip. And the first one, everybody remembers this one. And for any young people watching, this is one of the first memes. This commercial was so popular and so well known that it became fodder for late night television. It became sort of a running joke and a meme, and people would riff on it all the time. Oh wait, that's not the one. Top five. There you go.
Yeah.
Is there anyone out there who still isn't clear about what doing drugs does? Okay, last time. This is your brain.
This is your brain. We could all recite this.
Looks good.
This is your brain on drugs. Any questions?
Any questions?
There's lots of questions.
The first meme.
Hey, Lindsay.
What the?
I wish you didn't smoke weed.
That's awesome.
I'll be outside.
He doesn't want to have a conversation with their dog. Come on.
That's what Tiger used to say to me, but he was talking about booze.
So, Sarah, what's going on here? Sarah? Sarah.
She won't answer you. Or she can't.
Why not?
This is the way it's been since she started smoking pot. She's all lazy and boring. And quiet. You know, we used to have so much fun together.
And now?
This is what we do.
Can I take your order?
Uh-oh.
Hey, cheese nuggets.
Come on. Can I take your order?
Can I take your number?
Can I take your order?
Have you got any eggs?
Can I take your
order? Is the car full of smoke?
You spilled my sauce. Yeah, man.
Oh, everyone remembers this one, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's probably the most famous one.
It's yours?
No,
I... Mother said she found it in your closet.
I don't know. One of the guys must...
Must have what?
Look, Dad, it's
Where
not...
Where did you get it?
Dad,
answer me. Who taught you how to do this stuff?
You, all right?
You, all right?
I learned by watching you.
I learned
Parents
by watching you.
Drugs. Have children who use drugs.
His dad's Mr. Cutter? That's weird.
Oh, that last one. That maybe rivaled the This Is Your Brain on Drugs. That one also became a meme. Everyone, yeah. Comedians, everyone would take that line and riff on it. You know, I learned by watching you. You all right?
I have one. Pirate, if you can show the last one I sent you, or the second clip. So, yeah, this one. This is what I remember from. There you go.
Hey, Joey, I got some stuff you just gotta try.
What is it?
Pot, you know.
Marijuana. Oh, well, I don't know.
What, chicken?
Joey's in a jam. What should he do? Cake.
Get a pizza.
Excellent. Get a pizza.
Get real.
Got it.
You got it. Let's see if Joey's that smart.
I'm not chicken. You're a turkey.
Good one. Okay, that's cool. I was I remember watching that. I don't know that part was, but I remember when I was a kid seeing that part and just thinking it was so cheesy back then. Not just now, like back then I could tell, like, that's ridiculous. Like turkey. I always wonder what would happen if, like, they did it with, like, all black kids.
You're a turkey.
Which,
no, then the kid came and said, you're a jive turkey.
Jive turkey, yeah. Which is weird. Think about it. Most of these anti-drug commercials and shows didn't have black people in it.
You know, no, they didn't.
Isn't that weird? And certainly no one's smoking crack. Nobody cares about black smoke and crack, apparently.
This was before woke, when they would have been like, we need more representation in the anti drug, except they wouldn't do that because they don't want to show black people as using drugs.
Right, but, yeah. Right.
Ken Lipson, thank you for the super chat, Ken. Ken said, thank you for the show and those commercials. Ken, by the way, thank you for being here. I know this time is not the best for you. I told him, for anybody who has trouble making it here, and including Pirate Tomsky, I'm so happy you're here tonight. Mystery Chris has a day job that I'm eventually going to steal him from, but right now we have to do it at night. So, thank you, sir. Okay. Do you have more commercials or do you have, because I have something.
I only have one commercial, but I might save it towards the end.
Okay. I've got a special treat. This is Pirate. Can you pull up the one that I told you to start it at 1 minute 45? Now we're not going to watch the whole thing. You can watch the whole thing on YouTube later if you want, guys. It starts with a message from two very special people. It's a 27-minute anti-drug PSA that includes all of the popular stars. I think it was called All Stars something, help out. And it has like the Smurfs in it and Alf. And I think the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are in it. And every cartoon character you can think of is in it. And it starts off with two very special people.
Cartoon All-Stars to the Rescue is the powerful story of a teenager dealing with drug and alcohol abuse.
Some of your favorite cartoon characters will help you understand how drugs and alcohol can ruin your life. So watch the program. Talk about it with your family.
And make the right decision. Stay away from drugs and alcohol.
They open with the president. Adam says it's like Space Jam, but good.
That was smart.
Morning already?
I can't believe they put these Satanists in here.
Sneaky Pinky's gone.
It looks like he smoked pot, wouldn't it? Actually, Papa Smurf. Yeah.
Gargamel. It was all Gargamel.
What's the problem? Who smurfed the bell? Hurry, my little Smurfs. Corey's been robbed, and we must wake her up.
Oh? Alf!
Alf!
You want to help track down the thief, Garfield?
Hey, going through life with a blue lantern.
This is like the Avengers.
Wake me when the
cartoons are fighting drugs instead of Thanos.
The anti-drug Avengers.
Let me rephrase that. Do you want to help or do you want to be lunch?
My luck to be stuck on a dresser with a pushy alien.
And the chipmunks, everybody's there.
But where's Alvin? Alvin! Busy! There's someone who needs your help! What? Another autograph hound? Come on! Hey! Wait a minute!
Can we talk about the fact that Alvin was a narcissist?
Was he?
Oh, Winnie the Pooh. Oh my goodness. Okay, we can stop. If we keep going, we'll watch the whole thing. Just trust me. This is worth a watch. It's 27 minutes, and there's even more. They pull out all the stops, all celebrity cast, all your favorite cartoon characters. And there is actually related to it. There's another clip I sent you, Pirate. It's also called the All-Stars something. I forget the name of that one, but you'll see it. And it's related to this. And it was a song that they did with some of the characters. And that's much shorter. Oh, no. So we're going to watch that. This will just give you a little taste. Let's see. Is that one? I'm not sure. Let's see. I think that's it. Yeah. Yeah,
you look like three fine lads.
Wait, where'd that come from?
You know, I might have something here you'd like to try. Something to make you feel real good.
There's myriad wild and wonderful ways to say no.
Did you ever see this?
No.
No, that's no sir.
If you
pie.
Here's a practical reply.
Go ahead, let Sly spit right in his eye and say no!
Those drugs are so boring.
And they tell me that works fine. But the Bible begins to show me strength. Now you could say, beat it, get lost, get out of my face with that stuff.
But that could be tactless. You may prefer cool. Like this.
Get your time later, okay?
I've got too much.
That's horrible, Kermit.
Ew. Oh, did you know that Baby Gonzo is trans now?
Wait, what? No, I shouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
So, does he tuck his nose in?
Oh, no.
When you bounce, let's get wrecked. Go on, push, eject, protect yourself. Get out of the car. Be the first one on your block to say.
Yeah, forget it, Doc.
What a nightmare.
I wish I was high when I was watching that.
It would have been better. However, a billion jillion wonderful ways to say no. We kind of need them to come back and do that about just saying no to woke, because no is something that people need to say more often. I want them to redo that, but about masks, mandates, you know what I mean? Like all the stuff that's happening right now where people need to learn how to say no.
I thought you were going to say they needed to come out and say no to grooming teachers. Like, just say no to your teacher who's trying to teach
you
about masturbation.
Yeah, but they would never do. So maybe we should do a whole episode sometime then on cartoon characters from our childhood who've gone woke, because baby from the Muppet Babies, Gonzo is now trans. And there's a whole episode about him being he's Cinderella. Yeah, somebody says baby Gonzo. Yeah, I know.
And Elmo's a pedophile. Oh wait, no, that's in real life. So
Zap, thanks for the super chat. Says I love how they push that old bag out of the way for George to give a sermon on how drugs are bad in a totally non-forced way. A better time. That old bag.
Do you think it's had any effect on like in people you knew, like positive? Did you see any signs of this having an impact?
I think so. Actually, maybe people in the chat can tell us if these things worked on them or not. It definitely made me more hesitant as a teenager to try. I was sort of a late start when it came to alcohol and drugs. I think it did have an impact on me, is like being scared. But then what happened to me was sort of what I was joking about earlier, where when I did try pot and I thought, well, they kind of blew this out of proportion. Then I was sort of, well, I wonder what else they blew out of proportion. And so I think that was sort of maybe they could have talked about it being a gateway without saying it's the worst thing ever, you know,
because it had an effect on me. Particularly the regular smoking, just like tobacco smoking ones. Cause I don't know. I think it was in school even when, you know, I don't know what age I was, but when they were telling us students about, you know, not smoking and you get lung cancer and everything, like I was so freaked out that I knew that my aunt was a regular smoker. So I drew a book. I made a whole book talking about like the effects of smoking cigarettes. And I gave it to mom to give it to my aunt, and she ended up stopped smoking. My mom said it was because of that. I don't know. It was really because of that. But, you know, I like to think I had some kind of influence.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, I mean, if your kid comes to you or your nephew and is like, I'm concerned. I mean, that's so touching. I think that might have an impact on someone. That's great that you did that for her.
Cute, but sometimes it still feels a little, I don't know, when you're kind of, even though I agree with that, you know, obviously there are downsides to smoking. It just feels weird to tell kids, you know, having a school, you know, just tell them and kids just repeating it without really thinking about it deeper, you know, or considering any other things about it.
Pirate put his super chat on the screen. Ian so forth, thank you. He pays us in lira. Okay. I'm just kidding. The best way to say no is okay, but can you guys spot me on this one? I was just going to say, is that the musician way to say no?
I want to tell a brief story about a first time I had alcohol. My friends, this was a high school. My friends' parents went out of town, so they started to have a party. And one of my friends was able to get some beer somehow.
How old were you?
I was 17. And so they brought some beer over to the house, and I asked one of my friends, I go, if I get drunk, will I lose control? He's like, no, you won't. I was like, okay. Because I thought I was going to go crazy and start telling people that they were ugly. And I was like, I'm going to lose so many friends I get drunk. But it didn't happen. Oh, and the first thing I drank was Smirnoff Ice. I'll admit it. It was a dark time.
Oh, man. The first time I had alcohol was, I think it was graduation night of high school. But I had tried pot first my senior year before I tried alcohol. And I didn't like alcohol at first. It was like, this is disgusting. Why do people drink this? I don't get it.
Yeah, it took me a while to get into beer. I'm still not even like huge of beer, because you know, if sometimes I'll drink just to be social, but other times when I want to get smashed, I'm drinking for that. I'm not drinking for like the taste of it. So I'm not really keeping track of, you know, what type of beers, IPAs and pale ales. Like, I don't care. I just want to get drunk.
Do you think Americans have more of a problem with binge drinking because of our drinking age? I used to think that was true, but now I've heard so many stories about drinking culture in Korea and Italy and other places that I'm not really sure if we're an isolated case in this country.
Yeah, I don't think we're. Yeah, most people I've talked to have drank way before the age of 21. I mean, and even if it was like legal at a younger age, I still think there'd still be tremendously high rates.
Yeah.
But part of me almost like misses that time, because, you know, whenever friends come in around town or I'm hanging out with friends, we always feel the need to like go out to a bar, which is going to be fun. But it's like, you remember like way in early high school when we couldn't get beer and we had to find fun things to do about, you know, getting shit based.
Yeah. Should I tell a story? Probably not. I'll see. I don't know how much of myself to reveal.
Save it for the book here.
No. Okay. So I have another PSA. This is with one of my favorite characters. This is Pee Wee Herman. I know somebody in the chat is already a fan of this one, because I saw someone mention it. And there were, at the time, the Reagan administration, and then it continued all the way through the Bush administration, through the Clinton administration, it continued and it stopped after that.
They renamed it, right?
They probably renamed it.
Yeah, but like so they would, or something.
They would pay these different celebrities and different entertainment properties to run anti-drug messaging. And so this is one that Pee Wee Herman did.
This is crack, rock cocaine. It isn't glamorous or cool or kid stuff. It's the most addictive kind of cocaine, and it can kill you. What's really bad is nobody knows how much it takes. So every time you use it, you risk dying. It isn't worth it. Look, everybody wants to be cool, but doing it with crack isn't just wrong. Could be dead wrong.
Whoa. So I have two things. First of all, this is for the jackening, right?
This is before the jackening.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Actually, Twee Girl had the best comment. She says, Pee-wee in a darkened theater. Oh my.
I had a Pee-wee doll. Yes, I had a doll. Pee-wee doll. And right after that incident, it disappeared. And I don't know what happened to it. It went to go find a theater, a darkened theater.
Did your parents take it?
I guess.
I remember those PB dolls. I so wanted one. I never got one. Do you remember when Master P came out with a doll that was like kind of like the PB doll?
No.
And that you would pull the string and Master P would go, ah, na 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 na. Like, it was from his
terrible
soul.
Idea.
I wonder how many he sold.
Well, it's funny too. The I guess that Pee Wee commercial probably came out around the time that Marion Barry, you remember the mayor of Washington D.C., got caught smoking crack.
Smoking crack.
And got reelected after that.
Do you think that a lot of, because crack really decimated the Black community, especially in at that time in the 90s, do you think that Pee Wee Herman was the best person to speak to Black kids? Well, you, I mean, I guess so. You had a Pee Wee doll.
Hey, I grew up in the suburbs, not in the city. I wonder who the equivalent, who would be the Black Pee Wee Herman that could have spoken to inner city
Mr.
Blacks?
T. And I think
he Mr. had to T have done.
One.
Yeah.
He did one. Yeah, Pirate, see if you can find the Mr. T one. I didn't pull that one up, but I would be curious to see that one. I'm
smoking crack is whack.
I'm sure that's what he did. Yeah. Okay. I know you have another one, but do you want to show your commercial before we get into, because I have a couple of clips from TV shows. Now, we've looked at PSAs and how they put it in commercials, but then we also want to look at how they put the messaging into TV shows.
I'm going to save my clip for the very end.
Okay. Okay. I think Pirate has the, or he's looking for the Mr. T one. So why don't we put up then, this one's not a commercial, so we can move into how they put it into TV shows. Put up the Facts of Life one.
Was this like, did every like big 80s show have an anti-drug episode? It had to have been.
I think they did. They were paying the shows to do anti-drug content.
It's like each show had to have an anti-drug episode and a two-part episode where they went to Hawaii. Do you remember like all those shows that just went into Hawaii?
I don't remember Mama's Family.
So many others.
Oh, Mama's Family.
I love me some Mama's Family.
Oh, me too. I wonder if they had a... Okay, that's the Saved by the Bell one. There's one with from the Facts of Life. It's called Tootie's Bong.
Is that what the episode's called? Or just this one labeled the clip? Okay.
I haven't seen this yet. I hope this is right. But we can't hear it, Pirate.
Did you see this live? Or back when it was on?
No, I was just looking for some of the best clips. Yeah. Okay, let's see if we can hear it now.
Mrs. Garrett, you should see what we got at the record store. Three bongs.
I don't know that group. Are they punk rock?
No, it's not a musical group. Look here. Bong. Bong.
One like show that on TV back then?
Natalie, and we brought one for you too. Yeah, we're a three bong family.
We're a three bong family.
Do you know what these are used for?
Sure, you put jelly beans in them. I'm gonna put root beer in mine. It comes with a built-in straw.
I don't like to look a gift bong in the mouth, but why did you girls buy these?
Well, we figured if we couldn't be in the group, at least we'd have the same stuff.
You mean the girls in the group have these?
Well, I don't know about all of them, but I saw one in Tumpy's room.
Tumpy? Oh, girls, what people use these for is smoking marijuana.
Marijuana?
Wring their necks. How could they sell this garbage to kids? There ought to be a law.
We didn't know what it was for.
Yeah, but I'm sure that the girls in the group did. Now, girls, not a word about this to anyone until we talk to Mr. Bradley.
There's gonna be trouble. Make that trouble.
Catchphrase.
I wonder if they were pushing a law at the time.
Yeah, that seemed. Stuff. I was like, she said it. I was thinking, like, hint, hint.
There ought to be a law
out there. That didn't seem that bad. I mean, most of them, these episodes are very melodramatic, but this one's more comedic, even though they tried to have a slight moment of seriousness.
Yeah. So the next one is a crowd favorite. I'm pretty sure, just anecdotally, based on people I know, everybody remembers this. You mentioned this one, and it's the Saved by the Bell one, where Jesse gets addicted to... Now, what was interesting about this one was it wasn't about marijuana or crack or whatever. It was about caffeine pills. So... Yeah.
And I got addicted to caffeine pills in high
school. You did?
I was taking them, and like when I stopped taking them, I got really bad headaches, and I was like, and I was thinking, I learned nothing from Saved by the Bell. They were trying to warn me.
Yeah, so they were a big deal back then in the 90s and the aughts.
Yeah.
People were using them. Girls were using them to try to lose weight. That was a big thing. You try to get some caffeine pills. In the aughts, we were taking them and going to raves. It was like, you know, or those five hour energy drinks that the truckers take, you know. So maybe they chose this for a reason, because they knew kids were abusing caffeine pills. But let's watch this one.
Jesse? Hey, wake up. Come on, we gotta go to the Max. Come on, Jesse. Come on.
Zach. What time is it? I have to take my geometry test.
You already took the test.
I did.
Yeah, it's 6:30. Come on, we gotta go. Let's go.
Where are we going?
Where are we going? You're singing tonight.
Singing?
Yeah.
Tonight?
Come on.
Wait, what am I gonna wear?
Jesse, remember? Lisa's bringing your costume.
Right, I gotta wash my hair.
No, there's no time.
No time? There's never any time. I don't have time to study. I'll never get into Stanford. I'll let everyone down. I'm so confused.
Jesse, hey, just calm down. It's okay.
You're right.
It's okay.
Everything will be okay.
Yeah.
I just need one of these.
You mean you really are taking drugs?
I need them.
Jesse, give me
drugs.
Can't sing tonight.
This is like that.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited.
Just think about how legendary this episode is. Like everybody knows about it, even if you never really watched Saved by the Bell.
Hey, come on.
I'm so excited.
Remember that
time? I wanted to see her root around in the carpet looking for the pills, like in that movie Rush, when he drops he drops the coke in the carpet. Yeah.
So you have put in an article. I know you sent an article to Pirate, which I also sent the same article, one from The Ringer about Saved by the Bell. Yeah, this one. This one had some really interesting insights to the background or behind the scenes of this episode.
So this is an article entitled How I'm So Excited Became the Most Ridiculous and Iconic Saved by the Bell Moment. And scroll down and let's read some of this. I saw someone in the chat, I think it was Ozzy, said he's the only person that didn't watch Saved by the Bell. I didn't actually watch it that much either. I only saw an episode here or there. I didn't watch it religiously or anything, but I do remember this clip. Like you said, even if you weren't someone who followed every episode, it was sort of at that time, it did become iconic. Okay. Can you make it just a little bit bigger, Pirate? Thank you. Okay. Time out. It's not like Elizabeth Berkley didn't enjoy filming the Saved by the Bell episode, which Screech secretly records a slumber party to find out Kelly's true feelings about Zach. And she was fine with all the girls crushing on a cute substitute teacher at Bayside High School. But then she read the script for an episode titled Jesse's Song. She knew instantly this one would be different, and she became very, very excited. Quote, "We were going to explore something different on a Saturday morning show, and we were going to go deep," she recalls. "As a young actress, I was finally going to have something juicy. All the others felt the same way. Like, oh, wow, we were going to really act this week. It's not just who's going to ask who to the dance." What she didn't realize was that Jessie's song, in which her character, overachiever Jessie Spano, develops an addiction to caffeine pills to keep pace with her hectic schedule, would not only be the series' signature episode, it would remain seeped into our collective pop culture consciousness a full 30 years later. And just to be clear, this is not some you had to be there touchstone in the Gen X history. Even if you never watched a single installment of Saved by the Bell when it aired Saturday mornings on NBC from 1989 to 1992, you know the moment. You know that Jessie ends up melting down in her bedroom in front of her friend Zach and yelping mangled lyric from the chorus of a Pointer Sisters smash. "Do I even have to say it? Aren't you picturing? I'm so excited. I'm so excited. I'm so scared right now." But the popularity of Jessie's song expands far beyond the concept of a harmless teen comedy pulling a very special episode. In a ridiculously jam-packed span of 22 minutes, Zach persuades Jessie and her friends Kelly and Lisa to form a singing girl group. Samuel Screech Powers dresses in drag to record the girls singing in the locker room to covertly use as a makeshift demo. Said group, now named Hot Sunday, films a low-rent music video to impress a record producer friend of Zach's dad. A.C. Slater helps Jessie study for a geometry test and implores her to stop taking the pills. Zach and Slater fight over whether Jessie has a problem, and Jessie breaks down, then finally admits that she does have a problem. Quote, "The night that we shot it, I knew it would hit a nerve," says Peter Engel, the 84-year-old TV executive who developed Saved by the Bell and co-wrote the episode. Quote, "The response from the actors and the audience was unbelievable." Though Jessie's dependency issues were presumably resolved by the next episode, quote, "We had nowhere to go with it and we wanted to get back to the comedy." Like, she's got a problem and now she doesn't. Engel says the legend lives on in the form of gifts and kitschy t-shirts and musicals for starters. When a teaser for the brand new Saved by the Bell series on Peacock was unveiled in August, viewers saw a middle-aged Jessie, now a Bayside guidance counselor, slap a bottle of caffeine pills out of a student's hand and warn them of its dangerous effects. Quote, "I feel like we mentioned caffeine pills like maybe a dozen times throughout the first episode," says writer and co-executive producer Tracy Wigfield of the series, which premieres November 25th. "We wrote it for people who grew up watching the show, who are more mature now and wanted something edgier. I wanted to poke fun at it a little." And just to bring it all home to 2020, the three-decades-old episode even applied to Election Day. Quote, "I don't know if you saw my recent Instagram post, but it's perfect for us," Berkeley mentions about 30 seconds into our phone call. "It's a clip from the very thing we're about to talk about because we're all Jessie Spano on Election Day and so excited, yet so scared." Oh my gosh.
Just had to put it in there.
You just had to try and connect your drug addiction episode to the election. You just ruined it for me. Oh man, was there more of this article you wanted to read?
I only wanted to read the it's a little bit further down. Let's see. There's a paragraph that starts with a B, and the paragraph I'm going to read is a couple underneath that. So it starts if you scroll on down,
it's a large B.
Yeah, large B. Can't miss it. There we go. So I can scroll a little bit down, a little bit further down, please. So, okay, here we go. Where it says Engel insists, right after.
Down a little more.
Yeah, a little down more, please.
There you go.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, this paragraph right there. Thank you. So it said Engel insists that the scene was filmed more than 25 times. He kept saying, "Let them do one more," but the control room said no, he recalls. "I knew they could do it." Mark Paul was almost in tears at that point. Elizabeth was amazing. Then they did it on the 26th take. Everyone in the studio started to break down and cry, Berkeley says. She can't remember the exact number of takes, but she said she did indeed sob into Gosler's shoulder. Nobody was like blowing methanol into my eyes to get me to cry, she says. I mean, the thing was so clear to me that she was someone failing every category and can't keep treading water. She was just kind of had this that flip. I thought that was really interesting because she goes on to say that they didn't play it for laughs. Like, they were doing seriously. Like, obviously, you know, a lot of, I could believe that they weren't trying to go for laughs, but you would think that after recording that, it'd be kind of obvious that this is kind of silly and cheesy and it's going to come off as funny. But it was interesting hearing how many people behind the scenes were breaking down in tears. Like, it was that moving when everyone watching it, most people, had the opposite reaction where they thought it was funny, which is it's so weird. Like, I don't know, maybe out of context, it's, you know.
Well, you got to think about the context of that show. It even she said at the beginning of this article that it was nice to get, you know, something to sink her teeth into. Like, she really gets to act, and it wasn't just about who's dating who. So they kind of viewed that it was sort of this silly teenage show, Saturday morning show, that's all for the laughs and all for, you know, teenage drama. And for them, they probably were crying because this was like serious. They were probably like, we're doing something amazing. You know what I mean?
We're going to end drug use forever.
Yeah, they probably, everyone on that set. Plus, by the time you get to the 26th take, I mean, I'd be crying too. Like,
what if it changed? You found out they were all on drugs, like that.
Yeah, didn't we find out some of them were on drugs later?
I know Dustin Diamond, rest in peace, Screech. He wrote in his book that, you know, they were doing drugs and banging each other. Mm-hmm. I don't know how true any of that is, and I don't know if any of them ever confirmed drug use or anything. I mean, I would imagine it'd be some, but I don't know if it's like hardcore drug use.
Tree Surgeon says, I also teared up with laughter. Exactly.
By the way, have you watched any of the new Saved by the Bell? This new?
No. No. Have you?
No. No, I want to watch that crap.
Wait a minute. Okay.
Yeah, I did. Okay. Okay. Whatever. Whatever.
I learned it by watching you. Okay. Who taught you to watch that, Chris?
Yeah, I did watch. But to be fair, I didn't watch all the episodes of the first season. I watched some. And, you know, they play Zach Morris with a Hispanic young lady. And she does the same thing with, like, breaking the fourth wall, where she just talks to the camera and pauses things and stuff. And she's a very boring, flat character. And the person that plays Zach Morris' son is actually, in my opinion, funny. Because he's even though they're still doing a lot of things that they did in the original series, like, he still comes off as the, you know, funniest and best character, but he's, you know, in the background. And so the show also has a trans individual, which, you know, yeah. But the episodes I saw didn't really bring too much attention to it. So I was like, you know, if you're not going to constantly, you know, berate me, you know, over the head and tell me, you know, trans. And this person actually can pass, male to female. Mm-hmm. But so parts of it were woke, but there was one episode where they actually kind of made fun of woke, which confused me, because, like, you're promoting it on one hand, but then kind of making fun of it on the other one, because there's, like, a teacher, substitute teacher or somebody, or maybe it's a parent of a student that comes into the classroom and is saying that Frankenstein, Mary Shelley, is racist, and how Frankenstein represents something, and it's clearly done as, you know, making fun of, you know, people think everything's racist. So it was, like, on that point, I'd be like, okay, that's kind of funny, but then other points where they just put in the messaging that we're so used to in today's shows. I was like, that's odd. Like,
That's weird when they try to have it both ways. I kind of think that the new Sex and the City reboot is trying to have it both ways. They want to be woke, but some of the clips I've seen anyway, looks like they're poking fun at woke to me.
Hmm.
So I don't know. There is a thing within woke where they will make fun of, and they will point fingers at, because we know they eat their own, right? Like, they mob their own, they keep their own in line. And there is a thing within woke where they will make fun of people that they feel like are in it with insincerity. Especially if they're white women, they'll make fun of them. So that's probably why that's probably why the Sex and the City reboot feels like that, because they're sort of making fun of one of the white characters who's trying to be hip and woke and sort of failing.
I can see
that. Yeah. Yeah. Shagsworth says, hi, Shagsworth says, yeah, I noticed that with the new Sex and the City. Yeah, me too. Okay. One thing you said, that there's a trans character. You said that the Zach character is now played by a Latino woman.
Zach character. Oh, well, yeah. The person who's essentially Zach, the main character, is Latino. But Zach's son in there is basically Zach Morris of old, but he just doesn't really have much to do with the plot of usually with each episode.
Matt Deckard has a great observation. Wow. He says they eat their wounded. Yeah. Yeah. If you trip one of their invisible tripwires of woke, your own people will come after you.
Reminds me of Galaxy Quest. Did you ever see Galaxy Quest?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. The episode, or the part of the movie where they're down on a planet and they see those little cute baby creatures and one of them's wounded, and Sigourney Weaver's go, oh, it's wounded. She starts to go towards it, but then all the other like baby creatures like sort of show their teeth and attack it and like rip it to shreds.
Somebody needs to clip that. You should clip that. That is the work. Yeah. 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 Adam, right on. He says they smell blood and start baying. Yeah. Okay, so what else do you have queued up? Because I see something here in the queue a pirate has.
I just have that one commercial, PSA.
Do we want to talk about the DARE articles first?
Yeah, let's talk about DARE articles first.
Okay. So, pirate, bring up one of those. There's two of them. So, spoiler, the DARE program failed.
Dun, dun, dun.
This is an article called Three Reasons Why the DARE Program Failed. Let's scroll down. We'll read some of what they have to say about it. And, oh, man, you're going to have to make that bigger. Or, actually, I can open it here. Let me open it on my phone. Ta-da. I'm so excited. That's going to be in my head forever.
It's funny, in that article, they talked to one of the Pointer sisters who sing that song, and she was telling how she liked the episode, but she was like, hey, at this time, I was high off my ass. Like, it's
like, oh, she was probably cackling at that scene.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is from the piece, Three Reasons Why DARE Failed. If you were a grade or middle school student in the 1980s or 90s, you remember DARE, founded in 1983. Drug abuse resistance education was a byproduct of Nancy Reagan's Just Say No campaign and America's war on drugs. In essence, DARE was the youth-directed arm of these campaigns. Over roughly 15 years, DARE was a hallmark of public education. At its peak in the early 90s, DARE was implemented in 75% of schools and cost taxpayers an estimated $600 million to $750 million a year. Although immensely popular and touted by politicians, parents, and school officials, DARE had one glaring problem. DARE did not work. Kevin says, wait, the government war on drugs failed? The douche, you say? What can't the government screw up? Okay. The first, but not the last, major study to indicate the DARE program's failure was conducted by the American Psychological Association, the APA. After 10 years of the program's implementation, the APA ran a study of 1,002 individuals in their early 20s who participated in DARE in sixth grade. The study found no measurable positive outcomes regarding drug use, attitudes towards drugs, or self-esteem. Beyond the cheesy mascots, long lectures, and cringeworthy catchphrases, why the DARE program failed can be attributed to three fundamental reasons. Number one, public hysteria versus evidence-based education. There's a number of reasons why the DARE program failed. However, one contributing factor is the social context in which it was created. In the 1980s, the war on drugs hysteria was rampaging through the American psyche via paranoid media coverage. The Just Say No campaign and a policy of mass incarceration for drug-related offenses. In this environment, DARE was introduced to school-aged children by police officers rather than by substance abuse prevention specialists. That's true. They did have cops. I remember that. They kind of associated it with the penal system. Yeah. As such, the curriculum tended to focus on punitive consequences versus rehabilitative education. Along with the zero tolerance mantra of the Just Say No campaign, some experts claim that the presence of uniformed armed police actually made the program more adversarial than educational, especially for children who had police-involved experiences outside of the classroom. Number two, the politics of policy. Politics also played a large role in the assumed success and ultimate failure of the DARE program. From TV ads to bumper stickers to large-scale events, the DARE program presented a facade of success for years. Policymakers and politicians, as well as stakeholders who profited from selling DARE's curriculum, were fast to dismiss questions of the DARE program's efficacy. In fact, in a 1994 study conducted by the National Institute of Justice, the independent research arm of the Department of Justice, that was a major point of controversy. The Department of Justice, which gave federal grants to DARE, ordered for a large-scale report to be conducted by the Research Triangle Institute, the most prestigious research organization of its kind. After analyzing large amounts of metadata that showed that DARE simply did not work, DARE actually resorted to legal action in an attempt to squelch the report. DARE's reluctance to incorporate data to adapt its curriculum is arguably one of the reasons why the DARE program failed. They tried to cover up the fact that it wasn't working.
Gotta make that money.
And then number three, a faulty curriculum. For over 10 years, the DARE program involved 45-minute lectures that occurred weekly for a few months. For most schools, the program was incorporated in the fifth and sixth grades. Overall, the curriculum explained the risk of drug use and offered tips on how to refuse them. The program also attempted to foster a better image of the police and address issues such as self-esteem and peer pressure. In addition, DARE began creating literature for parents, such as the book Keeping Kids Drug-Free, with its 2,000-word glossary of slang terms and questionnaires designed to gauge a child's stress level. The book was out of touch at best and an attempt to scare parents at worst. For example, if your child answered yes to did something exciting happen, or if they tried hard to win a game in the questionnaire, then parents should be wary of possible drug use. Many critics lambasted the book as borderline fraudulent, while harsher critics reserve that term for DARE itself.
Doesn't that just remind you of all these unconscious implicit bias tests? And you have to take a test, and you clicked on the blackface first, which means you are prejudiced against black people. You're a racist. Did you know that? I guess I am racist.
Chris, there was a study. So they just did a study. So now they're actually admitting, the mainstream media is finally admitting that the government's response to COVID the past 2 years had an impact, a negative impact psychologically on teenagers. They're now, we can now say this without getting banned. Okay. And they're like, oh, wow, look at these studies. And so in the questionnaire, one of the studies I looked at, in the questionnaire where they were asking kids, you know, have you experienced this, they put in there, have you experienced systemic racism in the past? Like, and it's like leading. It's a leading question, you know?
I would love to see if they had like separate tests for different races, or like if you have black, you give them a test and just like, have you experienced systemic racism? And there's just yes and yes.
Right. For the white students, it's like, have you behaved in a systemically racist way towards the BIPOC in your class? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Has someone misgendered you? Leading question. Yeah.
It's horrible.
Okay, there's also a study which we can put in the comments. Let's not pull it up. That leaks to the study, but basically all the studies say the same thing.
Right.
It failed. Unless there's something in there that specifically that you wanted to highlight, is there?
No.
Okay. It failed. There we go.
So drugs are everywhere. Yeah.
$750 million a year the government spent, and it failed. I told you last time, maybe this is what made you think of doing this, but for anybody, when I was in Tanzania, I was there part of my senior year in college. And you would see there are a lot of the shirts and things that people donate at thrift shops. The overflow, the surplus gets shipped to a lot of different African countries. And so there would be people wearing all these like shirts with English on them, even if they didn't speak English. And there were two really funny ones I saw, but one funny one was a guy wearing a Dare shirt and smoking a huge blunt. And I just wanted to find out if he knew how funny that was, but.
Wow. I knew they shipped over like the sports teams that lose a championship, their merchandise, like Super Bowl champs, San Francisco 49ers or something like that. But I didn't know they had a bunch of Bear shirts.
Yeah, the other funny one, I told you this one, I'm sorry for repeating it. The other funny one was a guy, it was a man, and he was wearing a bright pink t-shirt with a slogan on it. That was so, it was just such a 90s shirt. And it said, from zero to bitch in 30 seconds or something.
Was this guy straight or
I don't think he didn't know what it said. He didn't know what it said. But another funny aside, the word, so I took Swahili for 4 years before I went there because I wanted to be able to speak. And I was in this one of the villages I stayed in. I heard these two women fighting one day, just screaming, and like the whole village was, you know, out just watching this fight happening. Anyway, they were screaming so fast, I couldn't really tell what they were saying, except one of them kept saying, mwa, 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 like, which, and that's what she was yelling at the other woman. And that means dog. And I was like, aha, bitch, bitch. They call people bitch here too.
It's universal language.
Yeah. Universal, yeah. Insult in every language.
Yeah, take that, postmodernist.
Yeah. Okay, so are we going to watch your final commercial that you have?
Yeah, let's do that. Pirate, if you could choose this. Yeah, here we go. A special PSA from Mr. Will Smith.
Oh, there you go. Hey, check this out. Here's the situation. Say you out with your boyfriend, your girlfriend. You know, you're at school, you at a club or something, getting busy. All right, you're just having fun. Somebody steps up to you and they tell you they want to rumble. All right, now just stop for a second. Before you lose your head, get all crazy and toss your hands up, just think. The person that uses the head can always defeat the person that's just trying to use their hands. Now remember that, because the more you know.
Wow. Why didn't that go viral? After the person that uses their head can defeat the person who uses their hands.
Yeah. Wow.
Did you just remember that?
No, I just found that. And, you know, I was searching for some things and I saw that. I was like, holy crap. How fitting.
You should put that on your new Twitter.
I should.
If any of you are on Twitter, Mystery Chris is now there. I'm putting it in the chat. And
oh, thank you.
You're a bit of a Luddite like me. You're much more, I'm a Luddite, but you're a real Luddite. And so,
yeah, I'm still figuring out Twitter. Like, I was trying to like retweet people. And I'm like, how the hell do I do this? And I was like trying to do a thing where you can just take someone's tweet and post it on your own thing. I guess that's retweeting, but I ended up like replying to someone's, you know, thread and nobody saw it. I was like,
yeah.
That was
thank you, Pirate. For anyone who missed it, that's what happened. You should tweet that out.
Yeah, I will.
Relevant right now.
I'm gonna start tweeting more stuff. Yeah, and by the way, I don't know if you're gonna save this for your Friday show, but what are your thoughts on the Chappelle thing?
What happened?
You don't know?
I've been moving and unpacking.
Oh, whoa, breaking news. So Dave Chappelle was doing a stand-up show last night. And while he was doing it, some guy jumped on stage and tried to tackle him. And Dave Chappelle, and I guess he tripped on the guy, but a bunch of people came out and just start beating the crap like his Dave Chappelle's aides and stuff. And you know, this guy, when they're showing pictures of him, he like broke an arm and it's all screwed up and stuff. But yeah, this is everywhere. This guy, it's a black guy, and he is a rapper, and apparently he made some songs about Dave Chappelle. And so I think that's...
Wait, the guy that jumped on stage and tried to attack him is a rapper who made songs about him?
Yeah. And apparently he also had a fake gun, but the gun had a knife on it. And I don't think it was extended, the knife was, when he tackled Dave. But yeah, it's everywhere right now. People are obviously linking it with the Will Smith stuff and how a lot of people were warning about how, you know, this is going to encourage people to, you know, do acts of violence towards comedians they don't like.
Yeah. I don't know if that's related. I mean,
yeah, I was like, it could be, you know, even if the Will Smith thing didn't happen, it could just be some crazy bastard who decided to jump on stage and do something. I mean, there are just crazy people who do things without any external influence.
Yeah. There are definitely crazy people just do things. I don't know if that had anything to do with Will Smith.
Yeah. But, oh, yeah. And they're mentioning in chat, Chris Rock was there, too. And Chris Rock gets on stage at the end and takes the mic from Chappelle and goes, was that Will Smith?
That's also a rapper.
Yeah. Well, these rappers, see? These 80s Christian conservatives are on to something. Rap.
Oh, I agree, Alan Scott. He said it sets a precedent that's not good. I agree. I think it does. I just don't know. It's hard for me to judge if that guy was like, that guy might have done that anyway. I don't know. Somebody said there was, this made me laugh internally while you were talking. I'm sorry. Where is it? This is about you. When you said you tweeted and you don't know if anyone saw it. Matt Decker said, I saw your tweet. I just muted it. Matt Decker gets me.
Yeah.
He gets my sense of humor. let's see. Pirate says, all night of anti-drugs. I got a quick vid for the other way. Haha. You do? Okay. You can play it. Pirate's choice.
Roll another blunt.
What is this?
Is this Afro Man? Oh, this is Afro Man.
It's Afro Man.
This is a rapper. This song came out like 20 years ago. About getting high.
Because I got high. Okay.
Yeah.
I know this song.
I was gonna clean my room until I got high. I was gonna get up and
I remember all my stoner friends loved the song.
My room is still messed up.
Do you remember when Kevin Smith was cool?
That was like 25 years ago.
Yeah. I remember when Kevin Smith was cool.
Before he just cried at every little thing and became shill for the big corporation movie studios.
Total woke beta mask wearing virtue signaling. He's always taking selfies of himself in his mask while hiking. Yes, Kevin Smith destroyed He-Man. Yeah.
No, Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
And they're supposed to, I want to say, I can't remember if it's another Jay and Silent Bob movie that's supposed to come out, or did it already come out? I don't know. I don't really care about it.
I don't know.
I stopped paying attention to his reviews because he's seriously every single Hollywood movie that came out, like big pop culture type, he would give positive reviews. Every single one. There wasn't one where he was like, oh, well, this one wasn't really good, or they could have done this better. He's just like, oh, I loved it. It was great. It was awesome.
He's a media darling. He's like the it girl. He's the Clara Bow of the 90s indie film scene. Twee Girl says, the good old days when Silent Bob was silent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think we're pretty much done here. The conclusion was that Dare failed. We did get to have some fun nostalgia through anti-drug propaganda. Anything else?
Don't take caffeine pills. Unless you're addicted like me.
I was going to ask you, actually. you got addicted to caffeine pills. Did you get over it in a day like Jesse?
It took like a week. Because I was getting like major headaches. And I'd take it more, but then I just went cold turkey and maybe ran over some people in my car. But
cold turkey's the way to go.
Sober real quick, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you got past that.
No, I am too. Chose life.
Thank you guys for hanging out with us tonight. I think we got all the super chats. Appreciate it. Just a reminder, we have tomorrow an interview coming out with Professor Michael Rechtenwald about his, well, we just briefly talk about his cancellation at NYU. We mostly are talking about the work he's done, the writing he's done about woke ideology and how it's infiltrated with corporations and why that's sort of on purpose. And we talk about ESG and stuff like that. So that's tomorrow at 6 o'clock Texas time. Pirate says, who's on Friday, Carrie? Who's on third? I don't know. I don't know. I have some people. I'll let you know tomorrow. We'll see. Thank you, guys. Thanks for hanging out.
Bye.
We're going to go out on a song. We should have gone out on that song.